Hi, my name is Frankie. Thank you for listening to Two My Mom. I never listen.
In this episode of Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli, we are joined by Ole Miss women's basketball head coach Yolette McPhee McEwen, or she is more affectionately known as Coach Yo. Coach Yo talks to Debbie about building her program in Oxford, taking a team that had zero SEC wins last year to a team that is the talk of the town in women's college basketball, coming off a late season surge. She called last season a humbling experience that caused her to cling even stronger to her faith and stick to her core values, which in turn, she admits, made her a better coach. Her belief is that in building something the right way, you can't skip steps. In recruiting, she looks for players that believe in her, believe in themselves, and believe in the vision of the program. Coach Yo also talks about the importance of networking. She talks about the impact that coaches like Agnes Baronato and Dawn Staley, to name a few, have had on her career. She also shares a story about Debbie Antonelli dragging her to a speaking engagement at a Final Four when Coach Yo was just a young assistant coach. Coach Yo stresses the importance of her wanting to leave a legacy. Coach Yo hopes to elevate the assistant coaches on her staff in the ways that her mentors have for her. She also talks about being a dreamer and a believer, betting on herself at every opportunity, being passionate, giving her all in everything that she does, and having a no ceilings attitude that's all been ingrained in her by her parents. Her mother, who was a principal, and her father, who was a retired basketball coach that still to this day is teaching young kids the game at local park named in his honor. Lastly, and most important to the overall scheme of things with the NCAA tournament coming up, Coach Yo makes the lasting case for why her team deserves to be in the 2021 NCAA tournament. Number one, it's the eye test. They defend. They play a style of basketball that is fun to watch and fans will and have gravitated to. Number two, they're trending up. They had a strong finish to the season, a season that included four top 15 wins, a sweep of University of Kentucky, and a big-time win against a thriving Arkansas team. Number three, they have ticket-selling players like first-team All-SEC Shakira Austin, SEC Freshman of the Year Madison Scott, and also freshmen like Jacoria Bracey and Snitter Collins, who are just so much fun to watch. And that's just to name a few. Do yourself a favor, sit back and listen to this episode of Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli and our guest, Coach Yo.
Man, you know what? There's some people that just light up your face when you know you're going to get to spend time with them. And Yolette McEwen is one of them, the head coach at Ole Miss. So, yo, what's up?
What's going on, Debbie Antonelli?
We go way back. I mean, I remember when you were a little assistant, working your way through, hustling in the gym all the time, working with those big post girls, a little bitty nothing. You know, looking up to these kids going, get your butt down here and do this and do that. I loved it.
I know it. Long time coming. I feel like everybody that sees me now, even the officials, remember me as that assistant, you know?
Well, you know, I get a lot of people that ask me about jobs and about, you know, opportunity for an assistant coach to move up. And one of the first things I say, besides, can they recruit, game plan, prepare, and game adjust? And sometimes we don't know the third piece. Right. But I'm like, I have to hear their voice in practice. If I don't hear their voice in practice, I tell the athletic director, well, I don't really know what they know. I've talked to them, but I don't know how they deliver it, how they communicate. How important is that for you when you're working with your staff now that you know that was what you did and you were working with head coaches that allowed you to do it?
Yeah, I mean, extremely important. I challenge my coaches every single day to, you know, give me their thoughts, give me their ideas, step in and practice. I'm not one of those coaches where they got to find that pocket. You know, I want them to speak. You know, my thing is I tell them, You know, you just have to figure out how to get your point across in bullet points, you know. But that's something that's important for me and their growth. And, you know, when I'm done with this, Debbie, I want to be able to be looked at as, you know, I know it's a it's a big dream, but like the PAC summits, the, you know, Vivian Stringer, you know, I already have one coach under me that has become a head coach. And so that's important for me because I want to be able to reach out and pull people up and leave a legacy. It's not just about winning.
I know you're a big dreamer, and I know a lot of people will tune into this, and the elephant in the room is Ole Miss in the NCAA tournament. Now, hang on, because I don't want to get to that yet, because I think for you to give your case, people have to know who you are and where you came from and understand why you're so passionate about this year's team. So I need to know about growing up in the Bahamas and coaching the Bohemian national team. What does all of that mean for you, for, you know, that little girl that's trying to live out her dreams also?
Oof, man, just being, like you said, born and raised in the Bahamas. I came over, played college basketball. I started at FAU, signed there out of high school, and then finished up at the University of Rhode Island with Bo Pearman, who actually I have on my staff now, so I hired her. And you know, coaching the national team, I've always been a dreamer. I've always believed in myself maybe more than anybody else. You know, I didn't meet someone that believed in me more than me, other than my parents, until I met my husband. You know, like, he's an overbeliever as well. But I think that's made me who I am. You know, sometimes it's like me coming here at Ole Miss. You know, some would be think, you know, it can't be done here. And some people say I'm naive, and to me, that's not a negative thing. That's a positive thing, because I don't look at things like it can't be done. I really believe in, you know, my motto, no ceilings. And, you know, so I've always had that personality, you know. So that same girl, you know, took the Bahamian national team and went and won a gold medal, you know. So that's just always, I took Jacksonville when everyone said that's a bad job, and beat Carl Semesco, you know, who every, and I say Carl Semesco because you know who that is, you know, yeah. One of the most celebrated. And if you look at his resume, it's impeccable. You know,
they still haven't, they haven't lost since November.
No. Yeah. And they don't lose. He, in his tenure, probably there, I think I'm the only one that have beat him more than once, you know? And so, and that was three times. And that's a big deal when you look at Florida Gulf Coast and the history and the dominance. They're like what UConn is to the conferences that they are in. So, you know, I've always been one to just, you know, bet on myself and overbelieve.
You also understand the value of networking. I remember a Final Four in Columbus. I believe it was in Columbus. I was going through the lobby with a cup of coffee on my way to go speak somewhere, and you popped up, and I was like, just come with me. Remember?
Yep.
When we sat in that meeting in Columbus, and we both actually, you spoke too, because I was like, hey, here's my friend Yolette. We need to hear from her too. I mean, like you said, bringing people along is what we're supposed to do. Where do you see mentoring in your path? And coming off the SEC championship, having two Black women playing for the title for the first time, Dawn and Joni both, I mean, incredible ambassadors for our game.
Yeah.
What does that mean for you, or how do you spin that so that mentoring is such an important part of what you do?
Yeah, well, you know, it's really always been a part of some, I've been passionate. You know, I think I get that from my mom. My mom was a principal for 30 years. So she always had a staff that she had to mentor, young teachers, you know, so without her really teaching me, I was able to watch her do that and bring them up. And then my dad was a high school coach. So it's really like in my DNA, just to give back. And my dad's 73, and he still every Saturday goes out and does like this skills camp with kids from the neighborhood. To this day, Saturday morning, if you're looking for my dad, He's on a court named after him, an outside court in the Bahamas, working with young boys and girls. And so it's really all that I've known. And I wish that, I know there are so many young coaches right now that would not have dropped everything and said, okay, I'm going. You told me to come on. I didn't care what, I had a full day schedule, you know, but it was important because I'm like, if I have a chance to be next to Debbie Antonelli, and I don't care what she says, I need to get that. I need to make that impression because she knows people that know people. And I know that no one knows me, and I need them to know who I am. And I've always been that way, you know, Debbie. You know what's funny? A lot of people now have been taking care of me because they would go to the Bahamas and I would get little packages for them,
yep,
and deliver it to their hotel room, like head coaches. And so
smart. Right? Network.
To this day, when I talk to them, they're like, yo, I remember that rum package you got me. And my dad would be like, why are you doing this? I'm like, Dad, I don't know when this is going to pay off, but I'm telling you, it's going to pay off. And I did it for like 4 years, because when they used to go to Freeport, that's where I'm from. And if I knew you, or if I wanted to get to know you, you had a package at your door for me.
I can't tell you how many times I have snuck a bottle of Crown into the SEC women's basketball tournament. I am confessing it right now because there are a couple of coaches that I knew were going to need it.
Yeah, I'm one of them. And seeing Don and Joni, you know, I don't think, listen, I know Don's spicy and to some can be controversial, but I don't think people understand the impact she has made in our conference and just for women of color coaches, period. Mm-hmm. She has truly stepped in and mentored all of us and paved the way and fought for all of us and has taken me under her wing since I was at Jacksonville, you know, and so selfless, understands the moment, you know, and not a lot of coaches do that. You know, I remember Agnes Baronato was one that understood the moment, understood, you know, women and history and, you know, and the what we're fighting for. You know, Agnes taught me some valuable lessons. And now Dawn is moving us into a new era. So I almost feel responsible that when she's done, then I need to do the same thing. So I'm like a sponge just watching her and Nikki Caldwell and her, me and Joni are like moving like, okay, we understand that at some point we're going to have to do the same thing.
It's interesting that both you and Joni, your mothers were principals or superintendent of school district, because that's what Joni's mom was. Yeah. You hit on two hot buttons there for me. One is, let's just talk about Agnes for a second. We all know she's in the fight.
Yeah,
and she is an incredible warrior. I want to keep it light because Agnes was one of the first people for me, with her five kids and my three, explaining to me why I should never feel guilty about what I'm doing and leaving home to go do my job, because they are going to be fine and they're going to be better for you not being around doting on them. Let your husband do a few things. And, and she said it sort of in that way. Of course, we know she said it a little bit differently.
She's Italian. She's Italian. So
I have been to her house in her kitchen where things are going on. Kids got jobs, no TV. You know, everybody does their homework. I mean, they all got responsibility. I've also been to mass in the basement of her house where she pulled the folding chairs out and we did communion and everything. I mean, what is the best story you have about Agnes? Because you brought her name up and she's somebody that we really should celebrate right now.
Debbie, she just texted me yesterday too. We still talk. She is just an incredible pioneer and ambassador for women. And one of the most selfless people I've ever met. And one of the best managers of people that I've been around. And I think the most important thing, this is Women's History Month. I remember her, I don't know what happened, Debbie, but I remember her pulling me and Caroline McCombs in her office. And I like, you know, she'll pull you like this.
Oh yeah.
So like I'm a young coach. She's like grabbing me, like, come on, pulling my shirt, come in my office. And something happened. And she said, I don't want you all to forget this moment. This is why women have to fight. This mm-hmm. is why we don't get what we deserve. And this is why you have to fight for what you deserve. I mean, and I'm sitting there like, what the hell is she talking about? I'm 26. You know, I don't know. But when I tell you there are hundreds of lessons that I learned from Coach B that I use to this day, I can never repay her. The only thing I can do is continue to fight, continue to mentor. It's the only way I can repay her back.
I think that's what she would expect. The other part about it is when Dawn discusses having two Black women mm-hmm. head coaches in the SEC championship for the first time, one of the things she always throws out as a disclaimer is it's not about race.
Oh.
Explain that.
Yeah, I mean, she gets a hard... Listen, Dawn says things that make people uncomfortable only because it hadn't been said before. You know, like when with Black women. Everyone's like, whoa, how, why would you say that? Censor that, you know? but she's saying it because she's talking about opportunity. You know, the SEC is so incredible to realize that, you know what? And it's crazy because we're in the South, right? So we're like head coaches in places that historically
yes,
have been
down. Down.
The South, you know? Yes. But she's talking about the opportunity. And John Thompson in his book, you know, talks about, you know, the opportunity to fail, the opportunity to try, you know? And women of color don't get the opportunity. And anyone wants to argue it, look at the other conferences. You get what I'm saying? But given opportunity, this is what can happen. It doesn't mean that a white person can't do it. It doesn't mean that Gary Blair, Vic Schaefer, all of Andy Lang can't do it. But Dawn Staley, Joni Taylor, Yolette McHugh, we can do it too. That's all we're saying. Mm-hmm. So let's diversify this thing. If you've watched my games, I'm wearing messaging, diversity, equality, inclusion, because it's important. I mean, we're in 2021. We want opportunity. It's not a race thing. It's saying a Black coach can do it too, you know? And that's powerful.
When our country turned upside down and it needed to happen,
mm-hmm.
Dawn was the first person I called so that I could listen and learn. Because I knew, having watched Dawn and been around her for so long, I have so much respect for her. I know in the state of South Carolina, the impact she's had here. And so I felt comfortable calling her to have that uncomfortable conversation. Yeah. She was the first person. And I think we talked for about 45 minutes. And one of the things that I referenced with her was, and I never felt comfortable saying it, but I did to Dawn. And that was, I have a child with special needs. Mm-hmm. So I have, through a different lens, but a similar, felt not wanted, not included, not allowed, not given an opportunity to try. And I've seen that through the eyes of my son. Not
yes.
Can't do this because he's this. Can't be here because of that.
Yeah.
And it was different, but it's similar. It's not the same.
Right.
And Dawn helped me understand some of that. You know, it's just, I don't know why we can't just come together. Unity is probably hope and unity and love. I mean, if you're not thinking about those on a daily basis right now, you're missing the whole point. And basketball is our vehicle.
Exactly. And you can't, Debbie, you can't be what you can't see. You can't be what you can't see. I remember watching Wakanda. And after the movie, I said, oh, my God, I just saw a Black superhero for the first time, you know, because unconsciously you don't even realize it. You think superheroes white, you know, that's what you think. And for the first time, you know, my daughter watched a movie, and for Halloween, she wanted to be the little sister.
Yeah.
Like, what? So I understand when I walk out to those games and when I do, someone's saying, wow, I could do that. Because I know when I met Pat Summitt, what that meant to me. Mm-hmm. But I also know when I saw Vivian Stringer, mm-hmm. what that meant to me. And so, and what I love about the SCC, you have the dainty Joni and Nikki Caldwell and Kyra Elzey, you know, they're dope. And then you got the Philly Dawn Staley, and then you got Nikki McCrae, and then you got the young, you know, so it's like we're diverse. We're diverse, and that's healthy, because people need to see that it doesn't have to be one particular way. And that's why diversity and inclusion is important.
You didn't win a game in the SEC last year. And I remember calling you to check on you. Are you okay?
It was the hardest thing ever. I mean, I almost broke several times. That, like, it was like when you texted me, the gods must have said, look, text her or she's getting ready to jump. You know, it was the most humbling experience that I have ever gone through. You know, I think people forget at Jacksonville, we were winning 20 plus games every year. You know, and I've always been an overbeliever. So I'm coming here, and that was the first time I questioned if I could do something. You know, but I can tell you this, I always got back up, and it has made me a 10 times better coach, because I had to say, okay, yo, this is a character check. You know, are you who you really say you are? You know, are you going to still be excited to coach those kids? Are you still going to encourage them? Or are you going to change because of the circumstance? So it allowed me to woman up and stick to my core values and my character, although it was a challenge. But I remember the last buzzer sounded and every emotion that I had that I was holding in came out as soon as I got home. And it was gratifying, but it was very tough.
How did you transition from that moment and that point mm-hmm. to getting back, get your feet back under you and moving forward and going, okay, this was a character building. What specifically did you learn that helped propel you to this year's success?
Well, I learned that you can't skip steps in a build. You know, you just can't. I don't care what it, if you're going to do it the right way, you got to go through the storm. And anybody that's flown knows that when you go through those clouds, it gets bumpy, you know, and there have been times when I take the little six seater to go recruiting, we go through that cloud. I don't think I'm coming out. but when we do come out, it's like a beautiful scene. And so you really have to, my faith got better. You know, I'm a Christian, so my faith really got better. I learned from that. And then I feel like God had his hand on me the whole time. Like, we still signed the number one recruiting class in the SEC. We still, you know, so he gave me stuff to like keep me going as it went through. And so that it prepared me for that. But I can tell you this, Debbie, and I've never shared this with anybody, but this is your podcast, so I gotta give the real. It has been a battle psychologically for me even through the season, you know. The fear of it happening again, you know, when COVID hit us and we took some steps back, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my God, is this going to happen again? You know, like, cause we lost like six games in a row. It didn't matter the reason, I knew the feeling, but we were still in games. It won a 60 point loss and a 50 point loss like last year, but the feeling that you came up short kind of lingered. Not heavily, but it was still there. So I had to fight that too. And so could you imagine the players that return, them having to fight back? Mm-hmm. building a program is tough, you know?
That's when you fall back on your faith and you fall back on not skipping the steps and knowing that have you checked the boxes on every rung on the ladder is right. What I'm guessing, like to build yourself back up. Because sometimes we all need validation that we are doing it the right way, or sometimes you can go through stretches even when you're successful, nobody says a word to you. And you know, when you get to that place, you know, what are some of the things that can pull you out?
My family, you know, it's been really a blessing. I have two girls, you know, my 8-year-old understands what's going on. And so sometimes she'll say, "Mommy, did you guys win?" Because she'll miss the game. But then, like this morning, I was dropping off and she goes, "You know, Mom, I watched the game. I'm glad we got one of them. You know, I'm glad we were able to win one." You know, and then my 3-year-old, she could care less because as far as she's concerned, I'm her superhero. So, you know, and my husband has been phenomenal. This year, what was interesting is the women of color coaches have been phenomenal in supporting me through the season. Like, even if it was a close loss, they'll say, "Yo, you don't want to hear this, but I'm telling you, you're close." And then Fan Chancellor Carol, every former coach other than the one I replaced has reached out to me more than at least half a dozen times this season, just to encourage me and say, like, I have a text from Ben this morning, just talking about how proud he is. And so it's been a village.
Yeah, it takes a village, right? It does take a village. So let's, before we get into the NCAA committee is listening and here's why Ole Miss needs to be on the board in discussion. Tell me about how you built the team back up, the number one recruiting class in the SEC and the transfer portal, and how you were able to move this whole thing, like move a mountain.
Yeah, well, I have three reasons why you come to Ole Miss to play women's basketball. First of all, Ole Miss, Oxford is a beautiful place. If you've been here, you know that. There are tons of things to do. It is Mississippi, but Oxford is like its own, you know, thing. It's very inclusive to anybody. As long as you have Ole Miss on your chest, they love you. But people come here for women's basketball for three reasons. They come because they believe in me. They come because they believe in themselves. And they come because they believe in the vision of the program. And that's staff and players. You can't come here if you don't believe in me. You can't come here if you don't believe in yourself. And you can't come in if you don't believe in the vision that I put together. You know, and so that's how we recruit. You know, we go for people that believe in those three things.
I believe in three things in anything that you do. Three reasons why you made this sub. Three things that you're going to do to win the game. It's always in threes for me when I prepare for what I'm doing. So when you go in and give your team a scouting report, do you have three important things that, you know, I know there's a lot of detail and we got to do this on the ball screen action and this personnel and all that, but overriding all of that little detail, is it three or is it something else?
Sometimes it's just one. Like I told them versus Tennessee, I said, we win the rebounding battle, we win the game, you know, and we didn't win the rebounding battle. so it's, sometimes it's just one thing, but That's interesting that you said that. Maybe I need to look at things in threes, you know, because, but I never looked at it like that. I just know when I think about Ole Miss and why we get people here, it's for those three reasons.
I think I got to three because in television, you know, it's a platform for teaching and for entertaining, and you really don't have a lot of time. So you have to be clear, concise.
Yeah.
And then be consistently fair about your opinion about teams. And so you really only need three things if you're going to describe, you know, what are the three really important reasons why you need to watch Ole Miss? So what are the three reasons why the NCAA needs to be looking at Ole Miss as a NCAA tournament team? Because should you get in, you're going on a list with a few other programs that would be incredible storylines to follow through the tournament.
I know it. Oh my God. Well, I think that we should get in because I think that, first of all, the eye test, you know, if you've watched us, the way we defend, the way we were able to keep the Razorbacks high octane offense, 24 points below their average. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Are you kidding me? That's what I was saying. You know me, all offense. I'm like, really? That's pretty interesting to watch, actually. How did they do that?
So that's first. And then I know the second thing is we are trending up. You know, look at our last maybe 6-7 games. You know, we lose to Tennessee on the road by one. Then we come home, we beat Kentucky, then we beat Alabama. A snowstorm hits, you know. They find a way to dig us out the snow and send us to Arkansas. We lose by 10. We come back, land the same time as Texas A&M, play the next day in 36 hours. No one has done that in 20 years here in the SEC. Played two games in less than 36 hours. By the way, they're like, number 3 in the country, and we lose by 10. Okay, then we get Kentucky, and then we go to the tournament. We beat Arkansas, and we're in the game with Tennessee, and our premier player gets hurt, gets a hip pointer, nothing, but she couldn't play anymore, and we still have a chance. We missed 2 threes at the end to make it really interesting, and I think we assisted Dawn, because if you looked at Tennessee the next day, they were completely worn out. that was us.
Assist. Yeah.
And then third, we have ticket selling players. Like you said, with Shakira Austin, man. Shakira, people want to watch us. I mean, she is a stud. And our whole team's just young and youthful. And I just think it makes a lot of sense. We have quality wins. Our net is high. Yeah. We're in a strong conference. You know, how could you not?
Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting this year because your story is compelling. There's a lot of people that have had the stop, the start, the COVID. You had a snowstorm mixed in there, which is ironic, you know, that would happen in the SEC. but the net ranking versus the Her Hoop Stats numbers, like Her Hoop Stats, I know you and I are both fans of what Aaron does. He takes a deep dive into some of your numbers, and it's compelling when you look at it. You know, I know the net tool is new, and I know there's some things in there that, you know, we don't know how it's going to work, especially trying a new tool in this particular year. But it's interesting that you think the eye test is one of the first things that you mentioned, because if you know the game and you follow the game, there is a compelling argument for you to be on the board in discussion.
Right. Right. And I don't know if people think like us. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if people think like you and I when it comes to stuff like that. But I know that the outside does. You know, our social media went bonkers after the game. People. Tisha Panichero, WNBA Plus, everybody was tweeting about our game and about Ole Miss women's basketball, you know. And so from a marketing standpoint, how do you not put us in, you know?
Yeah, it depends on the committee. Like, we don't know what criteria is being evaluated. And I always say, okay, the eye test works for UConn in their league. However, the eye test isn't always the same measurement that you might use for a different team.
Yeah,
You know, a Baylor or a Maryland or, you know, somebody else who's right there on the cusp of, are they a one, are they a two? But we're talking about teams in the middle of the Power Fives now that where it's really daunting to try to figure out what they're trying to do and how they're doing it.
And I think what's interesting this year is, first of all, it's a COVID year. You know, I think we would have been able to make a stronger case had we played a better schedule, but COVID didn't allow us to. We could barely leave and leave the state. But it's not regional this year. So if we're taking the best 64 teams, I think we make a strong argument to be that.
Well, you know, I'm excited about the three new things that we have in the women's game. You know, one location, no geography playing a role in seeding teams, which, you know, I highly think is unfair to players and coaches because the game has evolved so much past that 30-year geographical limitation. And then the net. I'm not so sure about the net. I mean, I look at Aaron's Her Hoop Stat stuff, and I probably should get him on the podcast because he's got a really brilliant mind about our and is invested in our game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been impressed. I follow Hoop Stats all the time. I mean, I just the net's interesting. I like the net more than the APR, the
RPI.
RPI. The net factors in like real stuff. An injury on the road, certain things that RPI just didn't.
Yeah.
You know,
well, there's some efficiencies in there for offense and defense. So it gives an actual
right
measure of helping the committee with basketball.
Right.
You know, if you can have, you know, I always go, all right, scoring defense is interesting because is that really the true measure or is field goal percentage defense? Because it's the number of possessions that you get. It's the pace you play. There's so many things that factor in, you know, like you got to really dive deep into it to figure it out.
Yeah. 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 What do you think? I mean, do you agree with my case? I mean, obviously we're not in there, but do you think I make a legitimate case?
I think you're in the conversation because you have four top 50 wins in a top league. With right now potentially two number one seeds, you know, if they both hold.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think coaches, I think you're in the conversation for sure.
Right.
But from your perspective, you know, for coaches, you know, now that we're not going to have geography and it's a true S curve, we always talk about the matchups or what color uniform you're wearing, dark versus white. But this might be a year where this could be absolutely incredible to watch what happens inside this San Antonio area bubble with teams that a lot of people may not have been paying attention to that all of a sudden are in the Sweet 16. Like, we've never had a lot of upsets before.
Never. And that's why I went in so bad. What? No regions? No, we can just strap it up, you know, and our style of play, like you have to play us tomorrow. Like there's so many good things for us. I think it's genius, and I hope, you know, sometimes NCAA, we fight just continuing to grow and that kind of stuff. I'm not saying that
they don't. A lot of legacy in some of the things we do, right? You know, right. You have a preseason poll in the AP, and if teams get in there, sometimes they can't get out. You know, or they just stay in there. They don't, not that they can't get out. Nobody really wants to get out of the poll, but everybody wants to get in. But it's hard to get teams in. And I know for me as an AP poll voter, it's harder and harder every Sunday night, early Monday morning. There's a lot of times I'll put it together on Sunday and I'll just go to sleep and wake up the next morning and go, well, maybe that team shouldn't be there or this team needs to move. I mean, it's a constant, like, because I feel a responsibility to validate why I do a certain thing. I hold that very important. Like, I'm not just scratching down a bunch of names and throwing them in there. Because I understand the impact of what the poll means for a lot of programs.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to get to, Yo, is I find you to be highly philanthropic.
Mm-hmm.
That you have a servant's heart. I know you've contributed to my fundraiser.
Yeah.
With Bo on your staff, I know you consider the KU Cancer Fund.
Yeah.
I know what you've done for your native land. And because you contribute to me, I contribute to you. I mean, that's kind of the way it works, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, how do you feel about teaching your athletes why having that servant's heart and giving is an important skill to have?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's that's a character building thing. You know, when my players leave, And I hope we win a whole lot. But if that's the only thing that they can talk about, as far as my impact, man, I've done an awful job. You know, seriously, this is my ministry. And, you know, not everyone that leaves my program is going to play big time basketball, but they can be big time people. You know, they can be great teachers. They can be great entrepreneurs, great police officers. I just want them to be great citizens. And you can't do that if you don't have a servant heart. And so that's why we serve so much. And our team got the SEC Community Service Team of the Year Award. It's just something that I was raised on. It's something that I believe in. And I believe in sowing seeds. I believe in it because it's going to reap. You don't know when. But I believe in it, and it's something I preach all the time. I don't even let my point guards eat last. And so like we would pray and they would go eat and they'd jump up and go. And the other, like 3 weeks ago, I said, I meet with my point guards and I said, hey, I eat last. So I don't, like, everyone eats before me all the time. And so I asked them if they knew why. And they go, no, I don't know. I said, because we're here to serve. Like, it's important that everyone eats first. Coach Yo eats last. The bus drivers eat before me. Sometimes they'll say, Coach, come on, you got to go, and they'll let me eat. And so I've started that with them because I'm like, what am I doing? They're point guards. Like, these guys are going to be future coaches and future a point guard. And so now they eat last and try to explain to them why it is important for their teammates to see them. And even if your teammates don't see you, because I don't do it for people to see me do it. I do it because it's servanthood. It's humility.
I love that, Yo. That's incredible. That is living by example.
Yeah.
I'm going to share one quick one. Now, I always say this to coaches. I've got one more, and then I always have another one. it's like saving that time out for the end.
Right.
Time out. I got one more.
Pre-game
meal or meals with your team. I want to share this with you because when I was calling a lot of games in the Big East, when Rutgers was in the Big East, and I would go to the rack and call a Rutgers game, I always called it a field trip in women's basketball because when you went to the rack, you just stayed.
Yeah.
They practice, you stay in the arena, you stay. There's nowhere to go outside that's convenient or easy.
Yeah.
And I was always afraid I'd never find my way back to the rack. So
it's hard to find the rack.
So I would stay in there. And I know that Michelle Edwards, Coach Stringer's staff, would always say, Coach Stringer wants you to join us for meal. And she never invited anyone to join them for pregame meal. And I have a special connection with Coach Stringer because of our kids. And so I would go in, and it was the most amazing pregame meal. I'd never been in another situation like that where you would sit and you'd wait till she came in, and then she would dismiss each table to go. And then when they were finished, they would ask for permission to leave. And she'd say, is everyone finished eating at your table? No. Well, then you can't leave. You're going to wait until everyone. It was really, really heartwarming to see how these young women responded to her. It was so positive, and how they cared for their teammates because of it. I mean, just an extra 5 minutes, like, you think you've got something more important to do than sitting there. Like, were you allowed to leave the table as a kid when you sat there till everyone was finished, right?
Yeah,
right. I mean, it sounds like an old school thing, but.
Right. And that is great. That's what I'm saying. Like, there are so many moments to teach. Sometimes I think that gets lost in the narrative. I kind of hate it. I wish ESPN and those guys would talk about other stuff more, because then I don't think fans would be as brutal as they are. You know, I understand wins and losses drive it, but engagement drives support too. You know, I got 100 Tennessee fans that said, you're our second favorite team now, you know? and that's big for a Vol fan, you know?
That's right. That's absolutely right.
but the engagement, yes. We lose that sometimes, you know? And I just think that's important.
Well, there's a lot of wonderful storylines out there this season. And whether you do or don't make the NCAA tournament, you have had an incredible season with great success, and you have moved that mountain, Yo. You have pushed it aside. You're just carving. You didn't even need to go over it. You're just tunneling right through it now. Like, you are bulldozing your way into the top line of the SEC. And we're so pleased that you could join us. Thank you for
being on. That means a lot, Debbie. You know, your mentorship has been incredible to me, and you challenge me from time to time, and you know I can handle it, and I love it, and we're just gonna continue to climb that mountain, like you said.
I'm with you. I'm watching, and I'm excited for your future. And well, maybe I'll see you in San Antonio. If it was up to me, you know, it's not up to me, but.
Well,
you got a good case. You got a really compelling case. And if the NCAA committee is listening, I know they heard what you said.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks so much.